Joining us on the phone right now is Noah Tishby. Her new book is Israel, A Simple Guide to the Most Misunderstood Country on Earth. Hi, Noah. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. Thanks so much for jumping on the phone. I loved the,
pleasure.
You know, the first two chapters of your book are kind of about you and your history. And I think, you know what, this is kind of the standard route for somebody. They be, you know, they kind of become famous and they act and they do things and they say, you know what, I'm just going to educate people on Israel. And that's just a natural career timeline.
If you know me, you would know that this makes a whole bunch of sense.
All of your friends look at each other like, yeah, I saw that coming. I got to tell you, I'm not
you
that surprised.
It's so funny. All right, we're jumping in. We've never met. We're literally jumping in. Your listeners are like, do they know each other? No, we don't. But yeah, the response, the reactions to the news of me writing the book. So obviously, I started my career as an actress and a producer. I brought the first television format to the United States. I produced it for HBO. I've been involved in writing and producing for my entire life. But the reactions to me writing the book were divided to people who don't know me, who are like, what she's doing, and to my friends and family and people who worked with me or whatever, that were like, oh, of course he's doing that. That makes a whole bunch of sense. Well, so yeah, this is a perfect question to start this interview.
Well, you've definitely been in the entertainment industry for a lot of your adult life. Your family history is rooted in the cultural history and the actual building of modern day Israel, right?
Yes, it really is. And all laughing aside, I've actually been working in explaining Israel to the general public for over a decade. So I've been researching this thoroughly and been working in this field for a very long time. And that's what this first chapter is about. It's kind of like, all right, I know that I've done X, Y, and Z that aren't necessarily your usual background for a history book, but here's why you can trust me with the story. And going into you know, my work in the past over a decade. But the fact of the matter is that my family, both my my parents, my great grandparents, and my great grandparents were involved in building Israel. Were heavily involved. They moved from Europe, pushed away by anti-Semitism, escaped right before the Holocaust, and came over to reestablish a Jewish state, and were very active in that. So I drew on my history and my ancestry and my DNA that just kicked in to action to tell the story of Israel through the story of my family. So it's a very different history book in that sense. It's not as dry as some of them can be.
You do talk in the beginning of the book about when you moved to LA and some of the people who are asking you insane questions about Israel, and you're just kind of like, wow, people really don't know about this, so I'm going to explain it. So you have been doing it for many, many years, and I'm going to hope that most of myself and our audience are not as out of touch as some of your friends were when you first got to LA, but it was a great education for me. You just went over a short kind of history of the entire history of that land and that area and how many different people have been in charge and how many different times Jews have been kind of kicked out of there and come back and everything that's happened there. And how important is that to the overall history? Because we talk a lot about right now, but that really relates to the past 3,000 years too, doesn't it?
It really does. And it was important for me to give that quick history of the world and quick history of the land of Israel, because the debate right now is so one-sided and not nuanced that a lot of people tend to say stuff like, oh, what they just kind of, the Jews just came over. The Jews, this is kind of like a new phenomenon. And it was important for me to be very clear that the land of Israel was only a sovereign state of one nation, and that's the Jews. Like, the Jews are the indigenous people of that particular land. They've been kicked back and forth, like in and out, for, you know, three millennia. And it's important to give that context. And again, I do it in a way that gives you all the information but makes it fun. So keeps it fun. It's when I was pitching the book to begin with, I'm like, I'm gonna explain to you everything you need to know about Israel, and it's going to be in a modern way, and it's going to be fun. It even may be funny, and people are like, wow, if you'd be able to do that, that'd be amazing. So that's why I swear to God, it's a fun, funny book about Israel. I swear.
Well, like,
you know.
I'm only a third of the way through it, but I will say, yes, I agree. You have pulled this off because I'm, you know, and I have other books on Israel and Jewish history, and they've been a little tougher to get through. So I appreciate that you're helping us get there a little more easily than maybe we would otherwise. And I want to ask, though, you know, you mentioned that Jews really are the indigenous people to this land. When we talk, you know, a lot of the talk currently is you've kicked Palestinians out, and you explain in great detail, like, listen, if we're going to talk indigenous, then there's no other way to go here than it's the Jewish people. But that's an argument, and that can alleviate some concerns from people. But how much does that truly matter today? I mean, listen, we're sitting on land that was not, you know, that was not European settlers originally, right? We took over this country. Mm-hmm. Countries and the land that Israel sits on right now has been taken over a million times over the years, as you list. So while that's a great footnote, what really matters is who has the power and who has the control. And that's the story you get into a little bit is you say, hey, you know, I hear people say this, David Goliath, Israel's this big military power and these poor Palestinians, but you don't see it that way. You want to reframe that a little bit.
I do want to reframe it, and it's not that I'm reframing it. I'm actually explaining it the way it is. So the Israeli-Palestinian conflict is not actually the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. It's the Israeli-Arab world conflict, which means the Arab world, the entire 20... So Israel is a country the size of New Jersey with 9 million citizens. 21% of it are Arab Israelis who have full rights, you know, like everybody else, because the important thing to remember is that Zionism was never about exclusively Jewish state. Never. In the founding documents of Zionism, it's stated in the Declaration of Independence of the State of Israel, it's stated. So to say there are a lot of claims about Jews came over and kicked everybody out, that's factually not true. There was, in 1948, there was a war after the United Nations granted Israel a state. There was the Jews said, yes, sure. They basically took that land, which was a British mandate, and they divided and said, all right, the Arab residents get the state and the Jews get a state. The Jews said yes. The Arabs said no. The Arab countries in the region basically said, if Jewish state is going to be created, we are going to attack and kill all the Jews. And that's 2 years after the end of the Holocaust. So the state of Israel did not want the war, did not start the war, did not ask for the war, said yes to like a two-state solution right at the beginning. And the entire Arab world said no. So they also said to the residents of the land, they said, they basically called on them to evacuate. So they're like, the Palestinian, the Arab Palestinians who are living there, they're like, just leave until we kill all the Jews, then you can come back, right? There was never a policy in any way, shape, or form to not incorporate the Arab residents of the land into the Jewish state. It just never happened. And the thing is that right now, again, we need to look at like recent history and kind of try to decipher, and you'll get to it later on in the book, why isn't there a Palestine yet? And there are a lot of reasons there, but it's definitely not as it is presented, especially unfortunately in more liberal circles. But for people who support Israel, who do kind of go, yeah, no, I actually do support Israel, but I'm not sure why, or I'd like to get a little bit more schooled and educated about the history, this is the book that kind of gives you the entire information in a way that's easy to digest and fun.
We're speaking with Noah Tishby. The book is Israel, A Simple Guide to the Most Misunderstood Country on Earth. It is a fascinating read. We've got lots more to do with Noah right here on 720 WGN. 720 WGN, Matt Bubala here with you. Noah Tishby's on the phone. Her book is Israel, A Simple Guide to the Most Misunderstood Country on Earth. Noah, you mentioned, as we're heading into that break, that the very liberal support, or tends to be support for, or more maybe sympathy for, the Palestinian cause, if I can just generally put it like that. Is that really odd for you? Because it seems like the liberal thing would be, you know, if we look at history and oppression, the liberal thing would be supporting Israel and the Jewish people, and the, if we get really liberal now, they're supporting Palestinians, and you've got staunch support always from the American government, and presidents, whether you like them or not, are doing things necessarily, you know, it seems like supporting Israel as a state, and it has to make sometimes for strange bedfellows.
Here's the thing. Supporting Palestinian, I support Palestinian rights as well. I support Palestinians. The majority of Israelis support Palestinians. It's not about supporting Palestinians. It's about anti-Israel sentiments. That is the problem. And that's a very big distinction because people tend to think that it's mutually exclusive. So you're either pro-Israel or you're pro-Palestine. That is not at all the case, right? I say this in the book a bunch of times. I'm a Zionist and I'm pro-Israeli. I'm pro-Israel and I'm pro-Palestinian as well. We all want to make sure that everybody lives together in peace and harmony. But why are we not there is an interesting question. And the anti-Israel sentiments that are sometimes called anti-Zionists, right, anti-Zionism, tend to give headwind to, or sorry, tailwind to forces on the Palestinian side and the Arab world at large, so I don't want to generalize the Palestinian side, that are literally in opposition to everything that's liberal. Okay, so for example, the Gaza Strip is a small strip of land that people tend to kind of conflate. They don't understand. You'll get to it in the book. I explained it very clearly. There's a very big difference with everything that's going on within the Palestinian people themselves. Gaza is a small strip of land 30 miles away from Tel Aviv, which is controlled by Hamas, which is a terrorist organization that wants to enact Sharia law and take over the world, starting with the Middle East. They are Sharia is literally the opposite of everything that liberalism stands for. Okay. In the most horrific, like it's literally, it's not conducive for human behavior, for human evolution. Sure. Okay. And by going so vehemently against Israel, what they actually do is strengthen illiberal, radical Islamist forces within the region. And the thing is that these forces know that they're using those young, like Americans on campuses and so on. They know that they're using them for their benefit. And that's the thing that's frustrating, because you can be supportive of Palestinians and supportive of Israel. You can stand for Palestinian development and strengthen and empowerment, and you can stand for Israel being strong and secure. These things don't clash, but it's the forces that go against Israel with so much passion and so much anger. Those are the ones that are extremely problematic, and those are the ones that are being used by nefarious forces in the region. I'm not sure they're even aware of it.
So is your feeling?
I talk about that in the book a lot.
Is your feeling, Noah, that if it wasn't for Hamas or other organizations like Hamas that don't want two states, don't want Jews at all, want to, you know, that really are anti everything outside of their own, that if it wasn't for those groups, if you just talk to the average Palestinian and the average Israeli, they would be all for figuring out a way for us all to live together?
I don't doubt that at all. And it's not just Hamas. There's Hamas in Gaza. There's Hezbollah in Lebanon. There's Iran, who's basically paying for all of them, right? So it's true that Iran is the greatest threat in the Middle East. There's no question about that. Luckily, they keep having these accidents in their nuclear power plant. They're very sloppy there, aren't they?
Noah, I see what you did there. That's going to get you in trouble.
So sloppy. Why?
Because you're saying that, we're all good with all this and we want to work together, but then you're slyly saying, I don't know what happened there.
No. I answered your question. I said I absolutely do think that without the radical forces within the Middle East, absolutely there can be peace in the Middle East. Absolutely. Look what happens with the Abraham Accord. There was a military training in Greece 2 days ago in which a UAE Air Force airplane and an Israeli Air Force airplane were practicing together. That's unheard of. That's amazing. Like an Emirati and an Israeli Air Force jet planes practicing together above Greece in a Top Gun training camp. It's unheard of. There's no question that the Middle East is shifting, and the more moderate countries and forces, or the people that want to modernize a bit more and want to kind of get rid of their own radicals, are starting to align themselves with Israel, because everybody understands that the radicals within that region are the problem. And yeah, the Iranian regime is bad news. It's bad news for the world.
Do you really think it's headed in a positive direction? I know it was a very big story when Israel and the UAE were able to kind of reach some sort of agreement on doing some things together. But Iran is still there, and all of our military conflicts from the U.S. over there have not necessarily helped things. They maybe strengthened things the other way. So do you really? And we had the Arab Spring. I mean, we've had all these things that you would think would mean, okay, we're headed in a better direction. I would think just the ability to have technology and freedoms would propel more freedom and things like that to happen. But it doesn't seem like we ever truly get anywhere. Are you really hopeful that we are?
I am hopeful because that's the kind of person I am. But there's a saying in Arabic. It's called shwaya shwaya. Slowly, slowly. It's not going to take a second. Look, the Iraq War, I was very young when the United States invaded Iraq. And I was at the time against it, even though I was personally attacked by Saddam Hussein in the Gulf War. I was like, what are you guys doing? Don't go in there. It's Iran that's the problem, not Iraq. And don't destabilize their region. Because when you destabilize the region in that way, you almost always get something worse. So there has to be some patience with the region. There has to be some kind of measured force to contain problematic situations as they arise. It cannot be in a second. Like, the United States can't just, like, march into the region and be like, let me give you democracy when it's not a stabilized situation yet.
Yeah, we've tried that in a couple places in the last 20 years. It doesn't seem to have worked out so well so far.
It didn't quite work. And don't get me wrong, I'm pretty hawkish on defense, right? I'm very liberal in my social standing in pretty much every area possible, and pretty strong on defense, which would make me a unicorn in American political kind of terminology. But
would it make you a unicorn in Israel? Noah, would it make you a unicorn in Israel? Because you go into the military in Israel. That's part of growing up.
Yes.
So I imagine you grow up hawkish on defense. And if you grow up in Israel, there's not a lot of people that are probably like, no, we should just put the guns down and it'll be fine, right? Because you grow up on the defensive, I imagine.
I was actually raised a whole lot more liberal than I am now on defense. I was raised very kind of lefty in my upbringing, and I grew up with the failure of the Oslo Accord and with, like, Arafat, major F up, pardon my French, and you'll get to that as well, with, like, actually he had the opportunity to complete everything. In 2000, it was about to be done. Bill Clinton and Ehud Barak, the Israeli Prime Minister, were waiting in Camp David. The deal was done. Arafat got 90% of everything that they got to start their own state, and he basically landed in Washington and said, no, I'm not going to sign it. And while he was negotiating with that, he was inflaming an uprising in the West Bank and Gaza. And the Israeli and the American intelligence community knew about this. And they're like, we're kind of in the bind here because we either go with him, but we know he's bad, like he's bad news, but we don't really have another option. But if this fails, this is going to send the center left peace camp, which was the huge, it's going to send us to a dead end. And that's literally what happened. So the Palestinians never missed an opportunity to actually create their own state. Their leadership needs to change. And that's what I'm saying. When you're pro-Palestinian, you need to call for a responsible Palestinian leadership, not bash Israel constantly.
All right.
Israel is the single consistent democracy in the entire region. Let's just get some balance here.
All right. Noah Tishby is with us. She is the author of Israel, A Simple Guide to the Most Misunderstood Country on Earth. Does she feel that Israel has some pitfalls, too, or some things that they have done that have not helped? There's a recent incident in the news this week. Tensions are inflamed there right now a little bit. I guess they always are, but it's in the news right now. A story from the Washington Post. Lots more to do with Noah Tishby after we check News Nation News right now on 720 WGN. Mepa Bala back with you on 720 WGN. Noah Tishby is with us. A Simple Guide to the Most Misunderstood Country on Earth. That's her book about Israel. Noah, as we're going into the news, you were saying that you were talking about the opportunity that was there that didn't happen and that Palestinians need to look at their leadership. Can you say the same about Israelis? Have there been mistakes made along the way? Have you always supported everything done, or do you think that both sides need to come together and change some things?
Absolutely not always supported everything that the Israeli government has ever done. Who supports every government, every action every government has ever done?
Well, I don't know. Yours has only been around for a relatively short amount of time when you think about it. So maybe it's been, hey, they've done pretty good.
73 years. 73 years last week. Happy birthday. Absolutely not. That's not the point. The point is, this is not the Puritan game of good versus evil. There is no such thing as good versus evil. There's no perfect country. In fact, the last chapter of my book is called A Country Without Sin, Cast the First Stone. There is no such thing as a perfect country. There's obviously a lot of mistakes that Israel has made as a country, as governments and policies and whatnot. That is not the point. We can say the same about American governments throughout the years. There are plenty of incidents to choose from, and it's true for the French government and the Australian government and every government on earth, right? That is not the point. The point is, where are the values aligned? Okay, so you got to look at the Middle East and the entire region, and think of us in the United States here, and in the West, and think of values of democracy, freedom of speech, human rights, women's rights, LGBTQ plus rights, any kind of right that we hold dear. And there's only one country in the entire Middle East that practices these values, that actually does this. And yes, it makes mistakes like any other country in the world, but it's the Israel surrounded by failed states, dictatorships, Islamist countries, wannabe Sharia states, and you can't judge Israel by the same parameters that you would judge Switzerland. You just can't, because when you look at Tel Aviv, which is an amazing city with one of the most happening like startup scenes and restaurants and nightlife and technology and whatever, and 30 miles from that city, there's the Gaza Strip with the wannabe Sharia law in the works. It's controlled by a terrorist organization. You will realize that if you were in the same situation, you would have probably reacted similarly. So there's always that saying of like, how many missiles needs to fall on San Diego from Mexico before the United States would get in there? But the answer is probably one, right? Israel tolerated thousands throughout the years.
Well,
that's the point.
I'm going to try to play devil's advocate a little bit, right? So
they do.
They've tolerated thousands, and other people might say, well, they haven't really tolerated it. You don't just let the missiles fly, and then we just say, that's okay, right?
Sure.
I mean, there's
sure.
pushback. There's missiles that go back. There have been takeovers of land or new settlements built, different things like that. So I can't imagine we can say that completely cleanly, right?
So again, first of all, Israel doesn't tolerate them because Israel uses the Iron Dome to shoot them down. That's number one. Hamas, on the other hand, takes the money that the international community gives them and the cement that the international community gives them and that Israel delivers to its to inside Gaza, and they use it to build attack tunnels and to put ammunition under schools and under hospitals. Like, this is bad news, what's happening there, and the people that suffer the most are the Palestinian people, 2.9 Palestinians that are literally living in an open-air prison, but they're living in an open-air prison under Hamas rule. So this is what the international community needs to shout against. So Hamas is one thing, the West Bank is another, and the Arab-Israelis, it's a whole other ballgame, right? It's three separate issues, which, again, I make it very clear in the book. You will get to that place as well in the book, and you'll see how I explain it. But it's not that Israel is perfect.
Of course.
It's dealing with nefarious voices that none of our listeners right now, hopefully didn't have to deal with here in the U.S.
You know, you mentioned the tunnels, and we have the same issue. Not, of course, I'm not going to say the same issue about anything, but we have a similar issue with Mexico and the cartels digging tunnels into the U.S. to deliver drugs. And I just think, how are they able to do this? And we don't have the technology to figure this out and stop this from happening. And
it's a great question.
You would think
again,
that
the difference is both these wars are horrific. One of them is the cartels that are bringing drugs into the country, which are arguably also killing a lot of people. And the other is Hamas, which are building tunnels in order to have terrorists literally go underground and attack in the middle of towns and to kill people. So it's a different level of fear that the people in the south of Israel are living under. Like, there are these stories of people living in the south and hearing knocking underneath their underneath their floor, and they know that something is happening down there, and they would call the military and be like, I think they're digging underneath my house.
Oh, geez.
So there is a technology there to identify the tunnels now. It's probably, I'm sure we have it here, and we should definitely, definitely use it because the cartels are horrific as well.
Why?
I'm not comparing.
Of course not. Of course not.
Very challenging, you know.
Of course. I know this sounds simple and dumb, but like, so why don't we dig along that border, like a really deep trench, or do something to make sure tunnels can't just come in there? Can't just dig a tunnel.
I am not a geologist, so I'm sure to that question there probably is a destabilizing the earth kind of an answer.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't know. Maybe there's a geologist listening to us now going, yes, you couldn't do this because X, Y, Z.
So maybe they didn't think of it, and we're presenting the solution.
It's you. I will give you the credit.
Noah's like, I don't want anything to do with the idea. I'm going to spread out social media. Noah Tishby on the show last night said, why don't they just dig a huge trench? That'll stop those tunnels.
I don't know. They're going to have to dig a really, really low. What do you make it out of? The thing, like, you want an earthquake and respond. I don't know. But I think they have some sort of a seismic. I don't know how to.
Seismic.
Sometimes people forget that English is actually seismic. Thank you. English is actually my second language, so sometimes I get stuck in like this is where it comes out. Equipment to actually figure out where the tunnels are. I'm sure the United States has. I mean, we have to have this technology here.
We're going to take one more break. When we come back, does Noah have solutions? Does she have ways that she thinks we could achieve peace in the Middle East? What can we as Americans do? And how should we be better educating ourselves besides buying the book, Israel, A Simple Guide to the Most Misunderstood Country on Earth? More next here, 720 WGN. 720 WGN. One more segment with our guest, Noah Tishby. She is the author of Israel, A Simple Guide to the Most Misunderstood Country on Earth. Noah is young and fun, and I know that it doesn't exactly come out necessarily in this interview with the questions we're asking and the subject matter, but this is not your father's guide to Israel. This is a what I would call a modern-day guide to modern-day Israel, and covers the history and still gives you kind of what's going on now from Noah's eyes. Somebody who grew up in Israel, served in the Israeli army, became a reality TV star in Israel?
Well, you can say that, except that it won't be true. I've never done reality.
All right, it wasn't reality. You helped bring. No, all right. So
I was actor and producer. I did TV and film and stage and.
But you broke through.
Nothing against it, but.
But what did you break through with in Israel? Because it was kind of like you had the choice of being in Greece or what? It was a pilot, right? And it became a huge. You were in the Melrose Place of Israel, right?
Exactly.
Yes.
More like that. Yes. Yes. Exactly. It was. I was an actress and a singer and a writer and a producer and I did great in Israel and did pretty well here too. But yeah, but not a reality.
I'm sorry. But you did help bring some reality TV to the U.S. Right?
I actually brought a drama to HBO. So it was a television show called. In Treatment, yeah. So it was nominated for 12 Emmy and Golden Globe, won a Peabody Award, and is now, we're filming for a season now, actually, with HBO. So.
Of In Treatment?
And it was the first time in Israeli. Yeah, of In Treatment. Yeah, it's been filmed right now.
Wait a minute. Now, I'm trying to remember In Treatment, because I want to say, who was the star of In Treatment?
Gabriel Byrne.
Yes. Okay, so this was a while ago, and you're filming a new season now?
We're filming a new season now, and it's the first time... an Israeli television show came to the U.S., and now there are a lot of television shows that your listeners may know or may not know are from Israel. So obviously there's Fauda and Shtisel, if people watch these on Netflix. But there are a lot of television shows that originated in Israel, like Homeland and Euphoria and Beauty and the Baker. These are all Israeli formats. These were all Israeli television. Yeah, there were shows in Hebrew in Israel first before they came to the U.S.
Did you like being in front of the camera, or do you like making the deals better?
That's a great question. And the answer, after thinking about this and giving this a lot of thought for many, many years, the answer has to be both. I tried to do either or, and it just never worked. And the fact of the matter is I started my career, I got my first scholarship, drama scholarship, from the Tel Aviv Museum of Art when I was 14. And then I started producing at 16. So I've kind of always done both. And when I came here, and at first I was focused only on singing and acting, and then I started producing, and for a few years there, I'm just like, I'm just going to be a producer. This is all I'm doing right now. I created this joint venture between the biggest network in Israel and ITV US, and I'm like, I'm only going to be producing. And for a few years, I was like running this this joint venture, and I was miserable. Or I was not fulfilled as I am when I do both. And I think being an author is a natural progression to what it is that I do. It's always been about storytelling. It always has been about storytelling, whether I play a role or whether I produce a television show that I didn't write, that I just helped craft, sitting in the room auditioning for something, or being the producer and auditioning other actors for something. It's all a part of storytelling and writing this book about my country, about my family, and making the story of Israel accessible for a large audience is a dream come true, and so inspiring and so much fun.
You mentioned storytelling has always been part of who you are. And when you were talking mm-hmm. earlier about the conflict and what we hear and what we see and how we ingest the information, it seems to me that a lot of our opinion here in the States on something happening very far away is based mm-hmm. on who's marketing their story better and who's getting their story in front of people. And it seems to me like that's what you're saying, like, hey, wait a minute, everybody. I know you think this is what's going on, but here, you have to see our side of this. You mentioned early on that we see this as David versus Goliath, and you think, yeah, but in this story, we're David, because Goliath is these 20-some countries around us who are all at issue with us having this Jewish state.
They have all, in various times, depending on the year, have tried to eliminate Israel. So Israel constantly has been under threat since before its existence. The Arab world can, should, and hopefully will help solve the situation with the Palestinians. I would venture to say that the Arab world has been implicated in perpetuating this based on history and facts. You kind of look at choices that have been made throughout the past 100 years, and you kind of go, oh my God, they've been using this against us. Ken Hussein of Jordan said that on the Daily Show like a few years back, and I was just floored that he said the Arab world, a lot of leaders, bad leaders in the Arab world, keep saying, look at Israel, Israel's so bad, and using all this propaganda against Israel so people won't look at their backyard and see actual human rights abuse and actual horrendous regimes. And it's very easy to take Israel and blame Israel for everything when you don't want people to look at your own country. This needs to change. It's actually skewed reality. It's actually skewed reality. It has to change. So, yes, the world is all about telling a story, but I also happen to have the facts with me, so I'm pretty confident about that.
You mentioned in the book, in the part that I did get to read, that that a long time ago, there was mm-hmm. a Jewish leader and an Arab leader who were planning, writing letters to each other, planning this two-state, planning how they would come out of the war after World War One, and mm-hmm. we'd have this, we'd have peace, and we'd have this land. So Hamas is there. There's lots of other countries and organizations that are anti-Israeli. How do we achieve peace? How do we get to a place where we can finally have people living side by side and people able to visit the holy lands that all of the religions, really, most of the bigger religions at least, hold very dear? How can we get to that place?
So first of all, this is a big issue, because a lot of people actually don't know about this. This is not just an Arab leader and a Jewish leader. It's the Jewish leader of the time, Chaim Weizmann, and the Arab leader of the time, Prince Faisal. And both of them had a very clear understanding after World War One that the Jews should go back to their land, right? And the Arabs should get independence in the Hejaz desert, which is later became Saudi Arabia. And they didn't get any of this because of colonialism. Right, so this was like the Arab world in the era in that time. They knew that the Jews were indigenous to the land. They're like, yeah, okay, yeah, we can work it out. We can definitely work it out. This is actually a huge moment in history that's not known enough. To answer your question, everybody can visit the holy places in Israel. Israel is controlling holy places of other religions, and it's the only country in the region in which you can practice any religion you want freely. So Israel is actually fulfilling that part in the bargain The only people that are not allowed to enter Israel are people that are citizens of countries that are at war with Israel and don't want Israel to exist, and also don't allow Israeli citizens to visit there.
How long is that list, though?
It's all the Arab. It's all the Arab countries. You know, listen. Right now, the deal. As soon as the normalization, the Arab Accord, the normalization with UAE was signed, within a day, Dubai was flooded with Israeli tourists. It was kind of comical to see. I was joking. I'm like, oh my God, they have no idea what just landed on them, and it was incredible. I had people there that are like, oh my God, you can hear more Hebrew than Arabic in the street. So, people on the street, both in Israel and in the Arab world, are gagging to connect, to relate, to coexist.
No, I apologize. I'm out of time. We're up against the top of the hour news. We've done an hour.
I'm sorry. It's 9:56.
No.
This is so great.
We could do so much more. I appreciate it so much. I hope I can have you back. I really appreciate your time tonight. Thank you for enlightening us and presenting your book to us. Noah Tishby, the book is Israel, A Simple Guide to the Most Misunderstood Country on Earth.